All right, so welcome everyone. This is the last episode of the Quantum Guy seminar for the season. And it's a pleasure to have Yannick Herfrey with us today. Yannick also was supposed to visit us. Unfortunately, we have to do this remotely, but I'm sure that the interaction is going to be very productive anyways. So he's going to tell us about the intrinsic conformal geometry of non-infinity. And so I'll just let Yannick take the stage.
Okay, yes, so thanks a lot for the invitation to talk in this seminar, and thanks for showing up. I want to talk about intrinsic conformal geometry of non-infinity. And so it's a subject which is, there's been quite a lot of work in that, but the really new bit is going the conformal part here. But before, I start discussing this, in order for this not to be too formal, I want to give you a bit of motivation on this work. My motivation really has to do with the black hole information paradox, and really in its reviewing or new perspective that has been opened by work of Hawking, Strominger, and Perry 4 years ago in a couple of papers. So let me just sort of rephrase that. So here is, you see, we have this conformal diagrams for black hole evaporation. So this is the horizon of the black hole. At some point, the Hawking radiation shows up and the horizon shrinks. In the end, the black hole disappears and all is left is a bunch of photons at future non-infinity. So the classic, the way to phrase the black hole information paradox, at least the way Hawking phrased it in his initial work, is the fact that whatever you could have sent into the black hole, let's say a pure quantum state, he showed that the radiation, in his derivation, has to be a statistical superposition in a thermal state. Of course, the paradox has to do with the fact that this map is not unitary anymore. So it tells you that there is something strange. If this is true, that there is something broken about the quantum theory that underlies this fact. So a very important point for me is that in this thinking of this paradox of Strominger, Hawking, and Perry is the fact that in his original paper, Hawking explicitly says that you should think of this fact, the fact that the radiation is a statistical superposition, as being a quantum version of the no-hair theorems. And why? Because in his initial paper, he thought of the no-hair theorem is the fact that after some time, whatever you throw into the black hole, the no-hair theorems, the way Hawking thought about it, is the fact that all is left is a chaos spacetime, meaning just the choice of mass and angular momentum, which is, somehow all the information has been lost from this perspective, and all that can be encoded in this space can, it can only be just the mass and the angular momentum. So this is this part of the results that has been reconsidered by their more recent work in the following sense, because actually it turns out there is an ambiguity in the no-hair theorem in the following sense. Of course, not in the sense that the theorem itself is not ambiguous, because here it is. It simply says that a stationary black hole must be diffeomorphic to a chaos space-time. However, there is something ambiguous when you try to say, when you start want to say that actually a chaos space-time is just mass and angular momentum. Question at this stage is, does the mass, just choosing mass and angular momentum uniquely defines chaos spacetime, and where the ambiguity lies in exactly but what you mean by uniquely? Because in some sense, this is not even true for Minkowski space, meaning when you have no mass, no angular momentum. So in which sense exactly? So let's take these diagrams be a Minkowski space, where really what I mean that I fixed a metric, I chose a metric which is flat, topology. Is this unique? Surely no, because of course I can still, anytime I have a diffeomorphism, I can act with diffeomorphism and get another metric simply by pullback, which is very standard fact, but usually what we do is we quotient by diffeomorphism. And if you do this, of course, what you get If you quotient by all diffeomorphisms, you get a unique Minkowski space. However, there is something more subtle that you can do. You can decide that you only want to quotient by diffeomorphism fixing the conformed boundary. So only by diffeomorphism, which are trivial, which are the identity at infinity. And if you do this, of course, the resulting moduli space is not just a point. There is, you have structure, it's a full moduli. And this is what I will call the gravity, the moduli of gravity vacua. So, and of course, the way to go from one gravity vacua to another is just to act with a diffeomorphism which acts at infinity. So in this sense, even Minkowski space is not unique. You have a gravity vacua. In particular, it means that the vacuum of gravity is not unique, which was one of Hawking's assumption is in his initial derivation. It also means that Noether's theorems, you should not think, if you follow this perspective, you should not think that a Kerr black hole is just mass and angular momentum. It's also a bunch of data which sits at the boundary, meaning at null infinity. So now what, it means that there are at least two assumptions which are wrong about the initial Hawking derivation, and it allows you to imagine the following type of situation where actually you could have a pure state getting out. It's just that now the Hawking, the radiation quantum states might get entangled with the gravity vacua, the degrees of freedom that sits at null infinity. This gravity vacua being now the quantum theory, a bunch of soft photons. Of course, if you were not to measure those soft photons and trace out these degrees of freedom, you would get back the statistical superposition. Okay, that's more or less all I'm going to say about the black hole information products. I'm definitely not going to solve these products, which would somehow implies having a precise map between those. But I want to take this as a crucial remark about the fact that there is something important about the classical phase space of gravity, and especially the space of gravity vacua. So this is my motivation to say that gravity vacua, this moduli space, is of utter importance, and you better understand it in as deep way as it should, as it deserves. And today what I want to do is I want to describe for you a fully geometrical description of this moduli space. And here by fully geometrical, I mean the following precise statement. It's an intrinsic description, meaning no reference whatsoever to the bulk. It's coordinate free, as any geometrical statement, by definition, any geometrical statement, there is a way of giving coordinate free definition. Of course, in practical situation, you want to work with coordinates, but it's also good to have coordinate free definitions. And main point for me is that it's going to be manifestly conformal invariant. And I'll come back in a minute on why why the geometry of null infinity is at heart conformal geometry. And therefore, it's very important. Whatever you do, at some point or another, you will have to deal with the fact that you need to check that your formalism has some conformal invariants, and this formalism will help you to do that in a manifestly conformally invariant way. This will really come from the fact that I'm going to present you a generalization of tractor calculus, which is a completely standard tool from conformal geometry. And the whole point why this this tractor calculus has been developed is exactly to allow you to do conformal geometry in a manifestly conformal environment. Let's start. So I'll start by reviewing some well-known facts about asymptotically flat spacetime, give you a bit of definition just to make sure that we understand each other, and then define the tractor bundle of null infinity. Okay, so first of all, asymptotic flatness spacetimes, there is a very long history of that, coming from the necessity of understanding in an invariant way the existence of gravitational waves. But I'm not going to review that. I'm just going to give you the end picture as developed by Penrose, the conformal compactification picture. So let M tilde G mu nu tilde be my physical spacetime. This is This is called asymptotically simple if you have the following bunch of other structure. You need that there is another spacetime, which is usually called the unphysical spacetime. And this unphysical spacetime is a spacetime with a boundary. So here's the picture, and you have this gray zone is the physical one, and really the unphysical spacetime is just this gray physical spacetime together with a boundary added at infinity, which is just this statement, the fact that M tilde is diffeomorphic to the interior. You also need a bit proceeding more. You also want the following things. You also want so-called boundary defining function, which is a function on my unphysical spacetime, which is zero at the boundary. And positive in the inside, meaning non-zero covariant exterior derivative. And this essential fact, you need that the unphysical metric is actually well-defined everywhere, including the conformal boundary, while the physical metric blows up. So it does not make sense at the boundary, but it blows up in a controlled way. It blows up as 1 over omega squared. And also, I mean, it depends if you are interested about how much differentiability I'm going to ask for this dmu nu. Really, all of the results that I'm going to ask for really require a very low amount of differentiability. Really, I only need that this dmu nu is of class C2, which is even low. You know, I don't even need the peeling for this dmu nu. If you're wondering whether or not I care about this. Okay, and this was asymptotically simple. You're going to, we said that space-time is asymptotically flat, respectively AGS or anti-de Sitter. If on top of this you have the following, you want your physical metric to be Einstein. If you want to include radiation, maybe you want to ask that your Ricci tensor is not flat, but some fall-off. But I won't need that really today because I'm really going to concentrate on the geometry at the horizon. And also the crucial part that distinguishes between flat and the sitter or AGS is the norm, is the value of the norm of the normal, or equivalently this number. It's asymptotically flat if the norm has if the norm is a null vector, a zero norm, and plus or minus one gives you AGS of the sitter. Yes. Okay, so this is. And in fact, so what I really want to emphasize here is, and which is sometimes not a bit played on, is the fact that there is nothing unique about this omega, nor this unphysical metric. Really, what's the physics is about this dmu nu, which is a ratio of the two, which means that you can always rescale your unphysical metric, rescale your function, and get the same physical metric. So really, what you care about is not a metric and a function, it's really this equivalent class of metric and function. This is very important for us because this is where conformal geometry kicks in. Because really, once you're fully working in Penrose, a conformally compactified formalism, you really care about the conformal metric and this function that is this equivalent class of objects. And you really can't get rid of that. Anything you do, somehow you should check that everything makes sense. All the charges, numbers you can cook up, they should be invariant under this chain. Okay. So now what do we get at null infinity? So we discuss what people call sometimes weak or zero order, sometimes universal, depending where you look at in the literature, a structure at null infinity. This is the following things. So what can we do? Well, the first obvious thing you can do is you take this metric, now this dmu nu, the whole point is that now it's well defined everywhere, so you can simply restrict it at the boundary. So you get an actual metric, which I'm going to call H, which is just a restriction of this dmu nu at the boundary. Once again, you have to remember that this dmu nu is not unique, it's defined up to an equivalence classes. So also at the boundary, you get this equivalence classes of metric. But the geometry does not stop here. You also have this function omega, so you can hook up this number, take the exterior derivative, and inverse of metric, and you get a vector field. This is the normal at boundary. Once again, it's not unique because really we're working with Nicolan classes, so this normal is defined up to this rescaling. And nice thing is that, specific flavor of this non-infinity geometry is the fact that the normal is inside the manifold, which means that you have this vector field, but also the metric is degenerate, and the vector field spans the degenerate direction. There is something else which comes from the fact that we are asking that the metric in the inside is Einstein, which is the fact that this metric has to have zero Lie derivative along the null vector field. So of course, here I wrote proportional because really H is, it makes sense only up to a scaling, so that's all you can ask for. So really, if you're used to using coordinates, this really means that your metric is U independent, does not depend on the coordinates along the degenerate direction. Let's summarize this in a more slightly more abstract way. So if I take Sprite to be a three-dimensional manifold, this universal structure of near infinity is essential the following set of data. I have this fiber bundle. I need Sprite to be this topology, this product space with the fiber bundle structure. I can project on S2. Each point on this sphere is on the line on the total space. So this is diagram that trying to represent that. You can anywhere you at any point in the sky you can project down on the space of on this two sphere. But there is more. This two sphere is a conformal metric. It's a conformal sphere. So you have an equivalence class of metric on this two sphere. If you want, you can think of this two sphere as being a Riemann sphere. And also you have an equivalence class of vector field in the vertical direction. Okay, so this is and that fact, but you can, so what's interesting is that this is a pretty weak structure. It's just a local with no differential object, so it's pretty weak. And already you can see appear something interesting is that if you look at the symmetry group of this just of this structure, what you get is that, meaning the symmetry group, the group of diffeomorphism which preserve this structure, what you automatically get is the BMS group. So BMS group, this perspective is just the symmetry group of this structure. What is going to be of interest for us is that even though this structure, this null, I want to stress that it's conformal, but it's conformal in a particular way because this conformal geometry, this conformal metric is degenerate. This null geometry is actually enough to define what is known in the conformal geometry literature as a tractor bundle.
Sorry, you went fast over the BMS group. Can you just go back and explain a bit more what choices are
necessary? So, usually what people, definition of the BMS group is as the group symmetry as asymptotically flat space. So it's being called a group of diffeomorphism acting on the four-dimensional space. But really,
but here you're not taking, for instance, the parameterization of the null rays into account. So you're quotienting by simple.
If you're thinking of KDS, you know that at the same time, conformal transformation.
I'm just asking, what do you call the BMS group here? What do you call it? It looks like it's just SL3, finite dimension group times the.
It's SL3 function. But this product is function on the two sphere. Yes.
Yeah, but what about diffeomorphism of the two sphere too? They are part of the boundary symmetry group.
It's part of this structure that you have a conformal metric. So you have a conformal metric on the two sphere. So the group of symmetry that are conformal transformation of the two sphere, which are precisely Lorentz transformation. So this is why SO31 shows up. This is a group of.
So you're already divided. You're dividing by the diffeomorphism group on the two sphere. Because right. I would, the edge mode analysis usually shows that the diffeomorphism group on the two sphere has possessed non-trivial charges and therefore there's non-trivial degrees of freedom associated with it. So you should not divide by it. It's part of the. It should be the boundary symmetry group should also contain that. And,
Yes, we could. We can perfectly do that. Yeah. But here, I think my take on this is that there is a layer of geometry under infinity. Here, this is the first. And of course, you could ask that there is nothing. So you have just then the full group of symmetries is diff S2. I agree. Here, I've already picked a little bit more. I chose a conformal metric and I fixed it once and for all. So left is a subgroup that is preserving that. And we also fixed a vector field. So the symmetry that is left is a group of symmetry preserving this, which is a subgroup of this diffeomorphism, which is the BMS group.
All I wanted to say here is just the fact that this BMS group appears as a group of symmetry for this geometrical structure. It's the group of diffeomorphism which preserve conformal metric on the base, which is the reason why you get a Lorentz group, and also this vector field, which is preserving this vector field is how these super translations appear. The real question I want to discuss today is how do you get the Poincaré group from that? Because this is the extra layer of geometry that I'm really interested in. So what is the tractor bundle? There are many different ways of defining it, depending on all your, the kind of definition you like. There is very invariant definition. If you're interested about this, we can discuss this later on, but I'm going to give you a very practical way of thinking of the tractor bundle in the trivialization. So here is what a tractor is. If you fix a trivialization, I'll tell you in a minute what really it means to fix a trivialization, but in a trivialization, a tractor is just this bunch of objects. So you need two functions, y plus and y minus, and yn and yu, they are just a vector field. So implicitly here, I've chosen coordinates on my net infinity. U is along the degenerate direction, and a is, they are coordinates on my two-sphere, so that this is a vector field. So a tractor is really a vector field together with two functions. So this is working in a trivialization. Of course, part of the definition would be the transformation rules for these tractors, and I'll come back to this in a few minutes. So it's a five-dimensional vector bundle. Again, my scry is three-dimensional, so this vector field has three dimensions, and I add two functions. The crucial point is that it's canonically defined from this geometrical structure I just discussed before, and it's also equipped with this degenerate metric. So just pair y plus and y minus, and then you use this HAB metric on y's. And once again, it's degenerate, it's part of the structure of this bundle, that you also have a preferred degenerate direction. You have preferred degenerate tractors, which is this one. So now to achieve the definition of that, I need to tell you, this is one realization. I need to tell you how these tractors transform. What is the transformation rules? In order to do that, I first need to tell you how you fix a trivialization. You do this by picking coordinates. So how is that? Again, it's a little feature from linear infinity. What I'm going to need is what I call well-adapted trivialization, which is a choice of function u together with h. So u is trivialization. So recall that this linear infinity really is a fiber bundle over S2. So the obvious thing that you can choose is a trivialization for this fiber bundle. It's just a function, and each fixed constant u gives you a two-sphere. And you also need to choose to trivialize the tractor bundle, not just this function u, but also a choice of representative. So now you pick a metric inside your conformal class. So you're going to need these two data, and also you don't pick them in any way. You need to ask that they are compatible in that sense, in the sense that really what you want is that your vector field, your preferred vector field n, you really want this to be just du, so the derivative in the u direction. This is what I'm going to need, what I'm going to call well-adapted trivialization, and these are what you need to trivialize, to represent the tractor bundle as I just wrote. So yeah, this trivialization allows you to represent the tractor field just like this. What's crucial is the way it transforms. Suppose I had chosen another trivialization, which means another metric, which is, I rescaled, just rescaling my metric. choosing another conformal representative, and I choose another function u, and because of this compatibility condition, really u has to be just a shift. And if you know you're sort of used to this, this psi is just a super translation. So how, you know, if you choose another choices like this, the whole point is that a tractor is going to transform linearly like that with P a matrix with these transformation rules. And this is where you know, the non-trivial bits kicks in, because you see that you have derivatives here, it's a non-trivial transformation rules, but the whole point here is that you see that this lambda is a rescaling. So this is in this sense that the tractors are going to be a manifestly conformally invariant way of thinking about the geometry, is the fact that via rescalings are now just linear transformation on my tractors. And these linear transformations, they are such that they preserve the metric I just showed you before, and also they preserve this, you see here, there's a bunch of zeros, it preserve this, preferred null direction. So, yes.
Sorry, can you say more? Does these two conditions uniquely define this PIJ?
No. Well, no, because Okay. So you should not think that the tractor bundle is something like a gauge theory. It's not. It is not an associated bundle for a gauge group. Really, the good intuition is to think that this is an extension of the tangent bundle. You see, the tangent bundle sits inside. So how do you trivialize the tangent bundle? Typically, what you do is that you fix. You know, you choose you choose coordinates on your manifold, and coordinates on your manifold induces coordinates on your tangent bundle. Here it's really similar. We are choosing coordinates, but in a bit of an extended sense, because you also need to choose a scale for the metric, but it's part of choosing coordinates. And once we choose coordinates, it trivializes the tractor bundle. So no, you see, because here, you know, all these, you have derivatives in there. So just, you know, just preserving the metric would not give you this structure. So it's really, yes, I mean, I'm not explaining you how you should guess that. I mean, once again, this is the way you guess that is that people have been working on that in conformal geometry for a long time. So that's how you sort of, you know, they have been building intuitions. But really, the end story is the fact that you choose, it's very close to the tangent bundle. You choose coordinates and they trivialize the bundle for you.
So, Yannick, can,
yes,
at this purpose, the Y plus, it's really like the choice of the scale, right? So you're adding it explicitly in some sense, just by looking at how it transforms. It just gets multiplied, no?
So yes, right. So I mean, what this is telling you is that this Y plus is like another scale in your game. That's a good point. Anytime you pick a tractor, the first coordinate is a choice of scale. Yes. But you know, you don't have to use this scale to do, you know, it's not the same scale that you use to represent the metric. It's another one. Right.
Thanks.
Okay. So again, this is in this, you see the whole point here is that this is complicated matrices, but from now on, I just showed you these matrices for you to know that it exists, but actually you don't need to remember that. What you need to remember is that there is this transformation rules, and that it's such that you know, realization is these choices and this keep of the metric. So now let's get to something interesting. We want to integrate the game. This is going to be done in the same way you can imagine, because it's, you know, it's a differential operator on the front of that, which is going to be just a tractor connection. The way to do this, you know, this, I'm going to need BMS coordinates. It's going to be useful to do what's actually happening. Because one reason why this choice of view and metric is useful is not just because they allow you to trivialize the tractor bundle. You think it's more part of the story. It's not part of the story, is that actually the one-to-one consequence is the choice of BMS coordinates. You are coordinating bulk, coordinates on your coordinate on space time, which is such as your physical metric as an expression of this.
So if you want, it's logarithmic degenerate with coordinates. You choose coordinates on the boundary and it gives you coordinates. It's useful because you can trivialize your geometry in this size by just making some choice. And now, so at zero order, you get
zero. Sorry, Yannick, but the audio is again bad. I think I'm not the only one probably with this.
It's true, it's scrambled again.
Should I try to, is it improving or should I try to?
Yeah, now it's bad.
Is it better?
Yes.
Okay, so yeah, if there is, you know, just tell me and I try to leave and come back again. So what I wanted to say is that these first two terms, they are really the same as this null infinity structure. This HAB is the degenerate metric, and really in this guy, this is the same as this vector field. Now, at first order in the expansion, there is something more interesting kicking in, which is this whole asymptotic shear, and it's known to be called the gravitational mediation. So you might think that this here is a tensor, a three symmetric tensor on the sphere, but it's not like that, because of course, something which is absolutely, I think, crucial to realize is that the fact that here you're using coordinates to represent your metric. So either you're using BMS coordinates, or which is completely equivalent, you're making these choices at the boundary, a choice of function U and a choice of metric at the boundary. So what if you had chosen another one? Of course, if you had chosen another
one.
So yeah, I was saying the CAB really is, you're using coordinates to make sense of that. The expansion only makes sense because you're picking coordinates. But if you had chosen another set of coordinates, which, as I told you, it really is the same as choosing another scale on your null infinity and another function U, you will get something different. And you have these transformation rules. The metric just get rescaled. The vector field just get rescaled as they should. But the CAB transform is in a non-trivial way. With this strange behavior. So the question here is, what is the invariant object, meaning it's a geometrical object whose coordinates transform with these transformation rules? And the answer is that this CAB, it parameterizes, they are the coordinates of a tractor connection, and here you are. So once again, the idea here is that I'm fixing one metric, and I'm fixing one function U. It allows me to trivialize my tractor bundle. I can write tractor connection. I'll come back on this in a minute. It's not any tractor connection which is like this. At this stage, I'm just telling you that the CAB parameterizes one tractor connection. You see, it's a non-trivial statement because the CAB kicks in many places. Here, downstairs, is just there is just this CAB, but you have derivatives either in this psi and U derivative either in this psi. The statement is the following, is that actually, if you change your metric and your U, you rescale it and shift your U, this is supposed to be a connection, so it should just transform as a connection with this P being the matrix I just showed you before. And actually what happens is that the form of this connection gets preserved by these transformation rules. And not only that, but also the transformation rules that get induced on your C, on your asymptotic shear, is precisely this transformation rules that is coming from the infinity. Once again, the statement is that there is an invariant object, which is this tractor connection, and in each set of coordinates, you get get parameterized by this here. Okay. So,
you need a question. It's a beautiful result. Is that new or is that an old result?
No, it's this is your result.
This is your result. It's beautiful.
I think, yes. Yeah. So, at the end, if I have time, I'll come back on discussing this as compared to what has appeared in the literature before, we'll do this later on because I'm already getting pretty late. So what kind of object is this tractor connection? So the brief answer, at this stage, the simplest way of thinking of this connection is to think that this is a gauge connection for the Poincaré group. And it's pretty clear how it happens. This
numbers downstairs, they are four numbers, so they are fours, while the matrix upstairs is really a parametrization of the Lorentz Lie algebra in a funny basis. Really, it's a null basis for the Lie algebra. So it's only the brief answer, because once again, as I already told you, you should not think that factors are, and you know, that this connection is a gauge connection and that it's a Young mystery. It's closer. You should really think that it's some kind of Levi-Civita connection on an extension of the tractor bundle. This is the correct picture, but I come back on this later on when I discuss gravity vector. At this stage, let me just summarize what I, you know, what is the message here is that, so once again, this CAB really is, they are coordinates for this point invariant object, which is the tractor connection. The tractors themselves, they are a natural vector bundle, which is canonically associated to a conformal manifold. It's standard conformal geometry. However, here there is, you can't just use these results because we are dealing with degenerate conformal geometry. So you really need to do a bit of work to sort of make sense of this tractor bundle in this context, but you can do it. Now, there is this fact that in conformal geometry, there is something called the normal connection, which is very close to the Levi-Civita connection. So in Riemannian geometry, there are many connections which are compatible with the metric. It's the same in conformal geometry. There are many tractor connections which are compatible with the metric. However, if you ask in Riemannian geometry that the Levi-Civita, that the connection is torsion-free, you get a unique connection. There is something equivalent in conformal geometry. You have to ask that the connection is normal. This is some standard things that you ask for the connection. It's just something about the curvature. And then there is a unique so-called normal tractor connection. So this is in conformal geometry in dimension I or equal to 3. But here, once again, we are not doing conformal geometry. We are doing degenerate conformal geometry. So this result fails to be true. So for one thing, you have to sort of twist a little bit the notion of being normal. This is something like being null-normal, but just that. It massively constrains the connections, but not enough to get a unique connection. So rather you get moduli of null normal tractor connection, and they form an affine space over a trace-free symmetric tensor, which is how you get back your CAB. But again, this tractor connection is an invariant description, but very practically, anytime you choose a representative for your metric and choice of function u, you trivialize your bundle and you can represent the connections in coordinates and you get a parametrization in terms of CAB.
Okay. So just a question, is there a sense in which the curvature of that connection is horizontal or vertical or localized along certain directions?
That's a good question. No, it's generally on zero. It's zero even in the vertical direction.
Okay. But the fact that you're saying it's an affine space based on CAB, which is a subset of the, I mean, it's a smaller subset than the space of matrices you have, suggests that.
Those CAB, they depend on you, right? But yes. How should I? What's the right way of?
So there's no special property of the curvature of the connection.
Being normal is a property about the curvature of the connection. It tells you that some part of the connection.
What does it mean to be normal?
So the curvature of this tractor's connection, they decompose in a certain way, and there are some bits of the curvature that has to be zero. For this curvature to be normal. Okay. So there are some part of the curvature which is, you know, that you take to be zero in the first place, and it's constrained the connection.
Okay, so that's what I mean. Yeah, there's some.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So yeah, it's. Yeah, otherwise the connection is not, you know, it's, you have a much, much bigger space. Yes, exactly. Okay, so I think this, it's good to have, I'm going to make a small comparison with Maxwell's theory because I think it's quite enlightening at this stage. I would like to show you the following parallel. So you should, if you think of Maxwell's theory, you can think of in the following sense. So you have a background, which is R4 with a Platt metric, a symmetry group, which is just the Poincaré group, which is the group of symmetry, you know, subgroup of diffeomorphism preserving the background. You can pick coordinates, which are 3 plus 1 splits, which are normal, and then the potential is phi and ai in these coordinates. The fields themselves, they are first order derivatives of the potential, and the field equations is, you know, you're requiring something about this field. So of course, this is a, you know, you're representing thing in coordinates changes the field, but it's preserved the form of the equation. And on the other side, if you fix coordinate systems, you can act with the Poincaré group in an active way, and it takes solution onto other solution. Something which is of course very well known is that you can also work in an invariant way. Then the connection, you know, I don't want to say connection here, but really the potential is a one form. Field is a two form, just an exterior derivative of the phase, and the field equation is something like this. You can say that this is a Poincaré invariant point of view in the sense that it does not depend on choices of adaptive coordinates, but still the Poincaré groups act actively and take solution onto other solutions. And this is very useful because, I mean, depends really, I mean, this is the kind of thing that depends on your taste, but it gives you a four-dimensional type of intuition. You can think in this way in a covariant way. It allows you to construct invariants and also give you new ideas like maybe Young's. And I want to say that exactly the same kind of story happens at near infinity. So you have a background. The background is this conformal metric and vector field. This is the so-called universal structure of near infinity. As Hashtag put it, you have a symmetry group, which is a subgroup of diffeomorphism preserving this background, which is the BMS group. You can pick coordinates which are adapted, and then the PMS group sends coordinates into coordinates, and potential is this CAB, and the fields, they are these Newman-Penrose coefficients, they are first order derivative of this CAB. I don't want to write to you the exact definitions, but these objects, they are really the one that encodes the gravitational waves. Now, yeah, really these objects, they are choices of outgoing or ingoing gravitational radiation. Once again, you can change coordinates and it changes the field, but the form of the equation is preserved and the BMS group acts on this solution. So what I want to advertise today is that you can also think in an invariant way about this by thinking that this CAB is a potential, is a tractor connection on your near infinity. Now the fields, which were these Newman-Penrose coefficients, you can produce them in a very natural way just by computing the curvature of this tractor connection. So really, you just compute that and it produces this Newman-Penrose coefficient. And the curvature, it encodes the outgoing gravitational radiation. So once again, this is, in this sense, it's a BMS invariant point of view, because in the sense that it does not depend on choices of coordinates, and the BMS group takes solution. Also, you can think of the BMS group as, you know, as actively acting on the space of solutions. And the, you know, the good point behind this is that now it gives you a conformally invariant type of intuition. You don't need to pick one metric to think of this. Everything makes sense in a conformally covariant way. And in particular, it means that you can imagine producing any kind of invariance just using some kind of any tensorial type of characters. You take a tractor, you differentiate it, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, so I think this is all I wanted to say. Now, I want to come back on gravity vacua, which was my original starting point. So as I just told you, gravitational waves, really, they are encoded in the curvature of the tractor connection, which also means that if you have zero curvature, there is no radiation, this is a gravity vacua. So the space of gravity vacua really is the same as the space of flat tractor connections. And this space, as I told you in the first place, is not a point, rather the BMS group acts on it, and this is this quotient, which is the space of gravity vacua, which gives you, yeah. So now I want to tell you more about the geometrical nature of this gravity vacua in relationship with these connections by answering in a different way this question, what kind of object is this tractor connection? So I already told you that you can think of it as a gauge connection, but you know, this is good, but this is slightly misleading. Because for our question here is, why is the Poincaré group showing up here? Of course, something we all know is the fact that Minkowski space is an homogeneous basis for the Poincaré group. This is this quotient. Something which is lesser known but still true is the fact that at null infinity, you can also think of it as a homogeneous species for the Poincaré group. This is this quotient, and really this quotient is just the boundary of this homogeneous spaces. This is where the Poincaré group comes in. There is something that you should ask yourself at this stage, is that there is something that's strange. I told you that the symmetry group of this geometrical structure, so conformal metric and vector field, is the BMS group, so it's infinite dimensional. But also now I'm telling you that you can think of non-infinity, meaning the boundary of this space, as these homogeneous spaces, and now it comes with a preferred action of the Poincaré group, just because the Poincaré group acts on this modular, on these homogeneous spaces. So how does these two facts stick together? Of course, what this really means is that this homogeneous spaces is equipped with more structure than just this universal structure. It's also equipped with a set of so-called good cuts, which are sections, so this is a fiber bundle, so it's a set of sections of this fiber bundle, which comes on top of the universal structure. And this space of good cuts, you can think of it as a choice of gravity vector. This is extra structure that, you know, gives you, that exists on these homogeneous spaces, but not just on this very weak structure. What are these good cuts? It's a very standard subject. It's been extensively studied by Newman and Penrose. Here is the picture. So if you're thinking that your manifold is the boundary of Minkowski space, then there is the following structure. Anytime you pick a point in the inside on your Minkowski space, you can look at the null cone emanating from this space-time point. And then the null cone, because it's, they are null geodesics, so they are conformal and they reach null infinity. Or you can look at the intersection between this null cone and the conformal boundary. And what you get is, you can actually prove that you always get a cut, meaning you always get a section of the of null infinity. And of course, because now anytime you pick a point in Minkowski space, you get a different cuts, which means that you get, if you're thinking that null infinity is at the boundary of Minkowski space, what you get is a four-dimensional space of these good cuts. So this is extra structure. This is more structure than just this degenerate metric. And this is this extra structure, which is, if you look for the subgroup of the BMS group stabilizing these good cuts, you will get one Poincaré group. Of course, there are many.
I'm confused about something. If you shine light ray from a point,
yes,
it looks to me, but maybe I'm clearly making a mistake, what I get is a S2 embedded into my eye, which is kind of different from a section. I get an embedding in my sphere into.
Yes, no, this is precisely a section. Right? A section is
oh, a, yeah, okay.
This is precisely a section. It's a submanifold of the null infinity that project.
Okay. Yeah. And that embedding could cross itself, or it's kind of very regular?
No, the point is that here it doesn't. It's very irregular.
In Minkowski space?
Minkowski space, yes.
But in a curved space-time...
In a good space, it could get very bad. Imagine you have a black hole, you could even have something that is not going to infinity, so it could get very bad.
Okay, but you still have the same notion of, cuts then, or... But you're not going to use it in curved space.
No, I'm not going to use it in curved. I think the whole work of Newman and Penrose, they were really trying to generalize this for curved space time. As far as I understand, there are many interesting results, but for me, they are really a structure of flats in Minkowski space. That's really the way I want to think about it.
Okay.
And it has to do with the fact that it's a gravity vector. So that's, yes.
I mean, can I say that it's kind of similar, in some sense, that's similar to Penrose's idea, to say a sphere is a point, right? So you're saying...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, yes.
That's a more geometrical way to formulate twister.
No, exactly. So if you know a bit of twister theory, this is where, in the first place, this is where the intuition for twister theory comes in, because it really means that from the point of view of null infinity, you can think of space-time as, you can think of space-time in an holographic way, flat space-time, You can think of it in an holographic way from the point of view of non-infinity by just saying that one point in space-time is a choice of cuts inside non-infinity. So yeah, this is the kind of thing that they were looking for, and they ended up developing twister theory from this perspective. So yeah, these ideas are very closely related. So now where I'm coming to is the fact that really the precise answer about what is this tractor connection, really it's a Cartan connection modeled on these homogeneous spaces.
Yannick, you didn't say what you mean by Car 3. You mean the Carroll group in three dimension?
Yes, this is the Carroll group in three dimension. Here it appears for some reason. This is the three dimensional Carroll group. I'm not going to have time to review for you what is a Cartan connection, but there is one essential property that I want you to have in mind is the following fact, is that an essential defining property of a Cartan connection modeled on homogeneous spaces is the following fact, is that a Cartan connection is flat if and only if you can find, it gives you, in a very practical, explicit way, it gives you a local diffeomorphism from your manifold into these homogeneous spaces. This is really what Cartan connections are for. They are really trying to identify you, your manifold, with a fixed homogeneous spaces. So how does it translate here? It means that for at infinity, the choice of gravity vacua, which is, as I already told you, you can think of it as a flat tractor connections. But tractor connections, they are Cartan connections for these homogeneous spaces, but just satisfying this. Therefore, by this theorem, this defining theorem of Cartan, it means that flat Cartan connection, gravity vacua, they are also choice of isomorphism from null infinity to these homogeneous spaces. So this is another point of view on gravity vacua. So you get the following picture. So gravity vacua, they are flat Cartan connections on these homogeneous spaces. They are also, by this theorem of Cartan, they are also an isomorphism to the homogeneous spaces, the model. But also, as I told you before, there is a four-dimensional space of good cuts on these homogeneous spaces. So now you have this isomorphism, you can pull back the cuts, and you get a four-dimensional space of good cuts on your non-infinity. And of course, also you have a Poincaré action on these homogeneous spaces, so you can pull back this action and get, it gives you a choice of Poincaré group inside the PMS group. So gravity vacua is all these. They are four different forms of what is a gravity vacua. And I want to advertise the fact that thinking in this way, in terms of Cartan connection, really unifies this different picture, which many, the last two, they are well known. This is new. The first two points are new, but these two last pictures, these two last points, they are very well known. The fact that gravity vacua is a choice of Poincaré group, it's also a choice of good cuts, but it appears as very, they appear as technical things that you derive in coordinates. Here, there is absolutely no computation to be done, but to prove that these Cartan connections exist, just understanding enough, just knowing a bit of Cartan geometry immediately gives you all these results and all these equivalents. So it's kind of a very nice unifying framework for this fact. Another thing that I want to advertise is the fact that...
Yeah, it's beautiful, beautiful stuff. You didn't mention that, does it correspond to the physical naive notion of vacua, which is like no shear at infinity?
Which is what?
No shear, like no production of gravitational waves. Like the square of the shear vanish at infinity. But that would be the way you would define a vacua physically.
Yes. This is, once again, all of these things, you can write them in coordinates and you will get back what you're used to do in coordinates. It will just organize the results in a nice way. Mm-hmm. In particular, what this tells you also is that, it gives you a very simple, usually something that people say, which is true, but you derive it in coordinates, is that there are these Newman-Penrose coefficients I showed you, and people say that you can prove that if those coefficients are zero, they imply that the news tensor vanishes.
Yeah, exactly. So, that's what I meant. The news vanishes.
Exactly. But so here, the news really is part of the coordinates inside this connection, but the invariant bits is in the curvature. These are those Newman-Penrose coefficients. So also the fact that this is in the curvature gives you, there is no computation to be done. It's just really telling you that when this curvature vanishes, it means that C is zero, or really that you can choose a set of coordinates where C is zero. Mm. It gives you immediate realization of this standard fact. But once again, you see that the fact that C is zero or news is zero, there are subtleties in the way you think about things, but really depends what you mean by the news. But if you're thinking that the news tensor is just the U derivative of CAB, this being zero is not invariant. If you act with the BMS group, you get it turns on and it's not zero. What is invariant is the fact that the curvature vanishes, that this Newman-Penrose coefficient vanishes. And they, of course, what it means is that when this curvature is zero, you can choose coordinates such that the shear is zero.
Yeah, very nice.
Okay, so one thing I want to also advertise is the fact, these good cuts, they are very, classical set of equations, extensively studied by Newman and Penrose, but sometimes, they appear as very, not very natural, there are some set of differential equations, but really, how should you think about them from the point of view of null infinity? Here you get a very straightforward interpretation, is the fact that you can actually prove that for a flat Cartan connection, the good cuts, so these differential equations, the good cuts equation, they are really exactly the same as a covariantly constant section. So having a covariantly constant fractals is the same as a good cuts. They are really the same things. So somehow it gives also a more geometrical picture on what these good cuts are. In particular, it's clear that if the curvature is zero, if you have a gravity vacuum, then it really means that you have a four-dimensional space of tractors, and this four-dimensional space of tractors, by this result, they are four good cuts. So this is how you get back your four good cuts. So everything gets organized in a very nice way. So here I wanted to discuss relationship with other type of geometry that I've been discussing in the literature, but I'm a bit late already. So if you have any question, I'm very happy to discuss this later on, in particular relationship with Hashtag-Carr and Giroir works. I now want to finish by discussing relationship with the memory effects, because also memory effect get a very nice geometrical interpretation in this picture. In order to do this, I will need the following fact. This is the fact that gravity vacua, they have this very interesting property. They are completely defined by their behavior on an open set of this type, so interval times S2. If you think about it, this is once again where it's completely different from a gauge theory. If you were doing gauge theory, a flat connection is not absolutely not defined by an open set, because you can always act with a gauge transformation, which is gauge transformation which is zero on this red open set but non-zero here, and you get another connection. So in gauge theory, the connections are not defined by their local behavior, but this is not what is happening here. Really, this connection is something which is tied up with the geometry of the conformal manifold. And you have this fact that if you pick up a flat connection on this interval, really it gives you a unique flat extension everywhere on the whole of Scribe. And this is a interesting fact, but there is nothing really deep about that. This is just the fact that being flat is a first order PD, and that choosing a flat connection here is enough data to solve this first order PD. So it's there is nothing very deep about this result, but it's still nevertheless true and interesting property. And this is at the origin of the memory effect in the following sense. So let's consider rather physical configuration where, so now, once again, your gravitational waves is about the curvature of this fractal connection. Let's consider a configuration which corresponds to a burst of gravitational waves, meaning that far in the future, there is no gravitational radiation, the curvature vanishes, and back in the past, there was no gravitational radiation either on an open set. But there will be that in between there is a bunch of curvature, you do have gravitational waves incoming. So really what I mean here is that the curvature is compactly supported. So if you have this kind of configuration, you can use these facts to produce the following interesting things, that now you have, you know, the connection is flat on this open set. So by this theorem, it gives you a unique flat extension, which I'm going to call D0 minus. So it's flat connection everywhere on Scry. It's uniquely defined by the behavior of the connection back in the past. And I also have a connection D0 plus, which is defined by the behavior in future, not infinity. Now, what's important is that those two connections, they are flat and they are well defined everywhere. So they are gravity vacuum already. You can, you know, because they are defined not just on these open subsets, but really everywhere on Scry, you can take the difference. The difference is an invariant of the underlying spacetime. It's really saying it's an invariant. You can think of it as in a more physical way, as saying that effectively the radiation in between has effectively sent one gravity vacuum into another gravity vacuum. So this is the content of the memory effect, is that even though back in the future you don't see any radiation, you're in a vacuum, there is still something that is telling you that there has been a shift in the gravity vacuum, which remembers the fact that in between you had gravitational radiation. So I think it's quite nice fact that you can phrase it in this sense. In particular, it tells you that it's coordinate invariant. There is really no you don't need to pick anything here. So now that was what I wanted to say. Let me conclude. So these null factors that I wanted to present to you today, they are what I believe is a very adequate set of tools when you're dealing with null infinity. And the deep reason is the following, is that as I try to make it very clear, the geometry of null infinity is intrinsically conformal. And you can't, once again, you can't really get around that. Any kind of computation you do, if it's correct, if you get a correct physical number at the end, there is a sense in which it should transform under conformal transformation, and so you have to check that. But here we are strictly speaking not doing conformal geometry; we are doing some degenerate version of conformal geometry. So it's rather weak. However, it's just enough to define a tractor bundle, which is a generalization from the usual construction from conformal geometry, but you need to adapt it to take into account this degeneracy. And it gives you a tractor calculus, and the whole point. Where am I? The whole point of this tractor calculus is the fact that it gives you a manifestly conformally invariant way of organizing your computation. Anytime you pick a scale, you get trivialization, but the tractors, they transform in a covariant way under conformal rescaling, which helps you taking into account this painful conformal freedom. So as a nice result, you get that using these factors, you get a natural answer about this question, what is the invariant way, geometrical way of thinking of gravitational waves? They are a choice of null normal tractor connections. And I remind you that in usual conformal geometry, there is a unique normal tractor connection, but here, because we are not doing conformal geometry, but degenerate conformal geometry, something different is happening, and you get a moduli space, and this moduli space is precisely modeled on a trace-free symmetric tensor, so you're asymptotic shear. And you get the following, so gravitational radiation themselves, they really correspond to curvature of the tractor connections. The gravity vacua, they are situations where you have no radiation, so no curvature, so they correspond to degeneracy flat tractor connection, and the memory effect is can be nicely depicted in this framework. There as an alternative point of view, these gravitational waves, they are a choice, they really have a choice of pattern geometry modeled on these homogeneous spaces, which is the same, which means that gravity vacua, they are flat Kaplan geometry, so they are maps to these homogeneous spaces. But they also immediately tell you that they reduce the symmetry group just because there is an action of the Poincaré group on these homogeneous spaces. And also, they nicely encode good cuts as covariantly constant sections. Okay, so nice, but so what can you hope to do with these kind of things? So once again, I want to stress that it's probably the only formalism, at least that I can imagine, that allows to describe the physics of null infinity in a fully invariant way, meaning a covariant way for conformal rescalings. And where we are going is that now we have been working on rewriting the Einstein-Hilbert-Baryshnikov principles in terms of tractors. And we can do it. So in principle, it means that all the physics of null infinity, you can expect to be reformulated in terms of tractors. And something that I'm really interested in is trying to repackage the BMS charges and fluxes in this formalism, meaning in a completely, which would, aiming for a manifestly conformally invariant way of writing down the charges and fluxes, which I think would be very nice. Also, I think there should be some sort of application to holographic duality, because if you're thinking that you want to couple some sort of boundary theory to this background, the geometrical background that is going to be coupled to is precisely this null normal tractor connection. And so this boundary theory, it should be a conformal, some type of degenerate conformal theory. So once again, using tractors, I believe should really help in making sense of, organizing this boundary theory. And something that I did not discuss, but I think is worth stressing, is the fact that it's very versatile. So here I really focused on four-dimensional asymptotically flat space-time, but you can do a lot more than this. For example, I could have presented you the 3D picture, which is also very nice. And I think it's quite striking, the fact that the BMS expansion is quite different in 3D and 4D. But still in 3D, you can think of the gravity vacua as being this flat fractal connection. So in 3D, there is no gravitational radiation, which means that the tractor curvature is always going to be flat. This formalism is very versatile. Also, you could deal with other cosmological constants, because once again, these tractors at heart, they are conformal, which means that they very nicely deal with conformal boundaries or these kind of things. In particular, I think one thing, you can also hope that they can be used to unify the behavior of the fields at finite null hypersurface. I have in mind the horizons as opposed to null infinity, because this formalism, because it's conformal, it's really, take care of this in the same form. Of course, the details are going to be different, but many things are going to be the same. At least you can see the difference. It all raises hope that you can maybe import ideas from one of these world to another. Okay. That's what I want to say. Thank you.
All right, let's thank Yannick. And questions? Yes, Aldo.
Hi, thanks for this beautiful talk. It was really, really great and very clarifying. You answer basically most of the questions I've always had in mind and couldn't even formulate about null infinity. So when you, at the end, you say that you're writing down an action principle for in these terms. Is this intrinsic to null infinity in some way? So it's like holographic or something like that, or goes into the bulk? And if so, it means that you can extend these choice of variables and so on to the bulk of the spacetime. So there's something I'm not fully getting there. So if you can.
Yes. No, so, this work I'm referring to is really just Einstein-Hilbert. This is the same action, just repackaging of the Einstein-Hilbert in terms of tractor variables. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because something I did not discuss here is the fact that all these things I discuss, all these tractors at null infinity, you can actually derive them by restricting simply the tractor geometry in the inside. So you can also do tractor geometry in the inside. It's just that, I mean, if you want, this is the way you can guess all of this structure, is that you construct the tractor geometry in the inside, which is usual conformal geometry, because the metric in the inside is a good metric, it's not degenerate. And then you have to think of a way of restricting this tractor geometry in the inside to induce something at the boundary, which is effectively the way you guess these kind of formulas. But here, what I mean by action principle is really just about the tractor geometry in the inside. And of course, what we have in mind is, you know, thinking about the way these actions could maybe induce an action at the boundary, but I'm really not there.
Yeah, okay. Thank you.
I think you partially answered my question. I had a question about how much of that you can apply to null surfaces in general. Finite null surfaces.
So the answer is I don't know. I think this is a nice thing that should be worked out, but it needs to be done. What I expect. So, I mean, null surfaces are different. They are very different in the sense that, you see, when you have a null surfaces inside your asymptotic flat spacetime, I mean, any spacetime, you get an actual metric induced. You just restrict your metric and you get a metric on your null surfaces. So you don't get a conformal geometry on your null surfaces. It's a bit different, but still you can.
Yeah, but there's also other data, as we know, that are. Which are maybe like, you know, we know that there's a scalar which gives like a connection, it's dual to the area. So maybe, you know, I was wondering, maybe all these, I mean, we know that the symplectic structure on our surface is split into a very special way. So maybe there's a very natural tractor, I don't know, interpretation.
Yeah. But I mean, yeah. Yeah, so certainly the answer is I don't know, but I can really believe that there is some kind of Cartan geometry living on these horizons. And this would be very close to this. The details are going to be very different, but the philosophy should be, I mean, I can really believe that the philosophy might be very similar. But yeah, this is to be done.
And you mentioned something about cosmological constant. There, like, you know, let's say if I have ADS, I don't have, same thing, I have a, you know, a fully well-defined geometry on the boundary. But you seem to say that the same structure applies?
Or yes,
the same definition of gravitational waves? And,
No. So, okay. Maybe I should also say this. I mean, this idea of using tractors to understand the boundary geometry of a conformally compactified space is not, you know, it's definitely not my idea. It's an idea coming from practitioner in conformal geometry. Some mathematicians from Rod Gover, and he's been the one working out our precise. So you see, you know, in ADS things are very nice and simple because, you know, the boundary is a conformal geometry, a good, well-behaved conformal geometry. So you get, you know, you get some geometry in the inside, and you have a conformal geometry on the boundary. So you can ask, how is my tractor connection? You know, I have a conformal. So you get a conformal geometry in the inside. You have tractors, and you get a conformal geometry on the boundary. So you also have tractors. So you can ask, how are those two related? And this has been completely worked out by Rod Gover. And now, what happens is that, you see, as I told you, in usual conformal geometry, there is no moduli. There is a unique normal connection. So there is no choice.
You mean that there's no vacuum? Is unique there? Like, you don't have this phase space of vacua that you have in flat? Is that?
It sounds like you can't have the connection. So, really, what happens is that, of course, in ADS3, you do have moduli because ADS3 is different. Because the conformal geometry on the boundary is two dimensional, so something strange happens, and you do have a moduli. But in general, the geometry is completely rigid in higher dimension. For ADS4, the boundary is a 3D, is a 3D manifold. There is a unique tractor connection. You don't have these kind of structures.
Well, maybe it sounds very strange. If you have an infinite number of vacua, they're not going to disappear just because I don't know. Physically, it sounds very strange. So maybe there's
yeah.
a constructed mm-hmm. assumption in.
So I mean, maybe as you suggested at some point, you were suggesting that maybe you should not think of this. You know, you should not think that you are fixing the metric. That really, you should act with diffeomorphism. You know, that choosing the conformal metric is part of the degrees of freedom, and that diffeomorphism acts. If you do this, if you are thinking like this, then you get a moduli again in AGS, of course, because then you can act.
Okay, yeah, I see.
What is particular at null infinity is that there is this layers of geometry. You can first fix the conformal metric, so it does not fix everything because you just get BMS. And then if you pick another layer, you get the Poincaré group. There are two layers. But in AGS, there is just one layer, which is just picking a conformal metric, and it fixes everything.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right. I want to ask, I mean, I want other people to ask, but I want to ask a bit more about this Carroll geometry.
Yes.
Because
it depends a bit what you. Okay.
Well, there's been lots of recent work trying to argue that the right geometrical structure at infinity is with the Carroll group. And,
okay.
Maybe I know what the Carroll group is, but I'm not sure if the audience is very familiar. They should be, but you know, I don't know how familiar it is for.
So let me give you my take on this. I think, okay. So usually what people do is they say that the structure, so here's what, for example, Gibbons and Horvati and Duval, they call the weak Carroll structure, which is really, it's the same as the structure I described, but really working in a fixed scale. You fix the metric on the base. So let's say, okay, now let's not work, because this is usually the way it's done. Let's not take the sphere on the base, but R2. So you take a flat metric on R2. So you picked one representative, and now you have one vector field. So, I mean, once again, it's really the same as the structure I described, just with a fixed scale. And then you get this infinite dimensional group. And if you do this, what people like to do is I think this is really, again, Gibbons, Duval, and Horvati. What they did is that they there is something they call the strong structure, which is on top of this local fields, you add a connection. You add a differential operator, which is compatible line connection. And once you do this and the connection is flat, what happens is that it sort of breaks your infinite dimensional group down to a finite dimensional group, which is the Carroll group. And so you see that what I discussed is very similar. Well, I think more precisely, more closely related to really the physics of null infinity is that, once again, so we had this null infinity structure, which was the weak structure. And on top of that, we added then the BMS group. And on top of that, we added the strong structure, this factor connection, which selects inside the BMS group, this finite dimensional Poincaré group. But I really think the fact that you have the Poincaré group showing up here is really telling you that this is the physical picture. And also, the group of symmetry that you need to consider is the BMS group. The BMS group is not the group of symmetry of this structure, of a flat metric. Not even flat or round metric. It's the group of symmetry of a conformal geometry. Intuitions are, the ideas, the philosophy is very similar, but I think you should not be misled in thinking that you can get rid of conformal geometry. It's always there. You have to take this into account.
I was thinking more of the work of Rob Lee and collaborators, that have defined this notion of conformal Carroll structure as a universal structure for the flat space analog of the,
Okay. So then if you're thinking like this, this is really the same as this non-infinity structure I described. It's really the same. This is this bit. So from this perspective, what I'm bringing into the game is what is the strong structure? What is the extra layer that you need to add to restrict, to pick up Poincaré group inside of this. I think, yeah. Something else I want to stress is related to Ashtekar work is the fact that, you know, you might think that, okay, I don't really care about conformal geometry because I can always pick one representative. I can always pick the flat, you know, the constant curvature representative, the round metric. I can choose it and fix my gauge. So why should I care about conformal geometry? And really, this is what this is really what Ashtekar has been doing in his work. He's working in a fixed gauge where he fixes the metric. And then you might think that really, you know, this Cartan connection I discussed, this structure connection I discussed from Vitros and Maslenia, you might think that really this is going to be this power structure just working in a scale. But this is not what is happening. And this is what Ashtekar has been pointing out, is that you know, as Ashtekar pointed out, you know, the strong structure under infinity, even in a scale, meaning if you're fixing the round scale once and for all, is not an affine connection. It's an equivalence class of affine connection. It has been Ashtekar and Giroir, you know, very beautiful work, but they explain that you can encode this gravity data as this equivalence class of connection, which is not the same as this strong structure. So, yes. So, and I mean, in this sense, this is precisely equivalence. You can really prove that these equivalence classes of connection, they are really the same as the tractor connection. Just that, once again, you're working in a fixed scale. So you, yeah. So, I mean, yeah. For me, really, the philosophy is that because you're doing conformal geometry, using connection on the tangent bundle is not a good idea. You should extend this, you know, you should do this tractor trick. Extend the bundle and work on the extended bundle to get an actual connection. Otherwise, you're doomed to working with something else.
More questions?
So is there a way to see this tangent bundle connection that Ashtekar uses for his equivalence classes inside the tractors, or is complicated and not very natural?
No, it is quite natural. But again, you know, the way it works is that...
No, just for curiosity, I understood your point of it's much more useful and invariant to extend. But
no, you can do it. It's very natural. It's okay. Very nicely sits inside. You know, again, the way it sits inside is you fix a scale. You choose once and for all your metric. And then, so remember, in the way I was trivializing my tractor bundle, there was two choices, a choice of scale and a choice of function u. So essentially what Ashtekar is doing is that he's fixing the scale, but then there is still a choice of function u. And anytime you pick a function u, you're changing this connection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the tractor connection is putting the two bits together, the choice of u and the choice of scale at the same time.
Okay. Since we're almost 1.5 hours now, if there are no other questions, then let's thank Yannick again.
Yeah.